Hello, and welcome to episode 65 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Ramona Maharg, an ESE teacher out of Ontario, Canada. She's also a podcaster and a member of the Voice Ed Radio family, so I was excited to have her on the show. Ramona and I talk about the power of podcasting and the Voice Ed Radio Network, how political education has become, the changes in sex ed curriculum in Canada, the effect of technology in the ESE classroom, taking risks and modeling growth mindset, and how important it is to never let your population be an excuse to not do something. So, sit back and enjoy episode 65 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Ramona Maharg. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Schreffler, and I'm joined today by a fellow podcaster, a fellow Voice Ed Radio member of the Voice Ed family, someone who, is just utterly ridiculous on the social medias. And I'm excited to have on the show Ramona Maharg, as you've told me. Apparently you say that when you curl. I don't know what that even means. None of that makes sense to me. But welcome to the show, Ramona. How's it going?
Ah, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Brad. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, it is. It's a good time. I've been a guest on your show before. We've been on a few different Voice Ed Radio things over the last year and a half or so. And I'm, excited to finally get you on my show.
Oh, it's exciting to be on your show.
It is. It is. For my audience who do not know you, could you give them an idea of who you are and what your role is and that kind of stuff?
Okay. Well, I am a special education teacher in a high school setting in St. Thomas, Ontario. So for those of you in the United States, we're kind of 2 hours east of Michigan and 2 hours west of Toronto, if you're looking for us on the map, not too far from the bigger city of London. And I have a congregated developmental education class. So that means that I have 10 students with fairly severe mental disabilities. So I can have kids with autism, kids with Down syndrome, kids who are working well below grade level. And so we have 10 of them in a classroom. We integrate them where we can. And then the rest of their day is spent with me working on life skills.
So are all of your 10 integrated to some level in a standard classroom setting?
No, just a few of them right now. I have a couple who are working at like a JKK level. And so those guys don't do a lot of integration at the high school level. But I have also a few who are working at grade like 5-6 level. And so those kids are definitely integrated as much as we can. So some of them have a lot of integration. Some of them almost no integration.
Okay, cool. This is going to be a dumb question, but I always, in my experience with ESE and being in ESE classrooms has always been that it always makes me feel like it would be tremendously challenging, not only from a classroom perspective of trying to do the things that a quote unquote traditional teacher would do, but I also feel like it just is just draining on a lot of levels. Would you agree with that, or do you have sort of a different take on that?
Well, there are days when it is definitely, definitely challenging. Especially Mondays, some of my kids really struggle with transitions and with change. And so to come off a weekend and come in on a Monday, Mondays are exhausting for them and for us. It's hard for them to get back into the swing of things. But, there's lots of days where I'm thinking, wow, this is a pretty, pretty good gig because, I can have my kids for 7 years so they can be with me from the age of 14 to 21. And so the relationship that I build with the kids is pretty special. Like I really, really know my kids. I generally know their families pretty well. And so that's something that a lot of high school teachers don't have the experience of knowing their kids as well as I do.
Yeah, true. Especially like, I think like when I was in high school, I could have my kids for 4 years is sort of the max. And so to get those few extra years, I'm sure make a big difference.
Yeah. And not only to have them in your, like for 75 minutes, a typical period in our high school is 75 minutes, but I mean, some of them I can have all day. Some of them I'll have 2 periods a day or all 4 periods a day. And so, we get to know each other fairly well.
Makes sense. I like that. That's good. So it's not without its draining days, but definitely increases the rewards. Is that a fair
yes.
interpretation?
Absolutely. Cool. Yeah.
In addition, as I said, you are also a podcast host yourself.
I am. I have
a fairly new podcast.
Yeah, it just started in February of this year, and it's called I Wish I Knew EDU. And on it, I like to talk to teachers about those things we wish we knew when we started teaching and get to know some of the different things that folks are doing. Because, you know, when you start teaching, you think you're going to be teaching. I thought I'd be teaching history and English at the high school level for my whole career. And then you get into the job and there's all these different opportunities out there that you never even dreamed of. And it's neat and interesting to talk to folks about different journeys their career goes on and the opportunities that are out there if you're interested.
Interesting. Yeah, it is. It's a cool show. I've been on. Like I said, I have been on the show. I was on one of the early episodes, and I actually just listened to, as we're recording this, an episode that just came out with you and my good friend Carol Salva, who is just a wonderful person.
Oh, lovely.
Despite the fact that she refuses to get on my show, and by refuses, I mean it's just like impossible to line up a time on her calendar because she's a crazy, busy, amazing human being. But still, I'm just going to say she's refusing because it'll pressure her into getting on here.
Absolutely. And well, and you know, to give her a little bit of slack, I mean, she did show up at your house.
She did. She did show up at my house. And she did stay with me for a weekend. So I guess she does get some credit there. And she was on an episode when we talked about the Ed Camp. So, I mean, she technically has been on my show. So I guess that's true too.
Yes.
So, but I still want to like give her a hard time. Because
oh,
what would
absolutely
be the point without it?
Yeah, she could take it. She could take it.
She can handle it. She hung out. She handled me just fine when she was here and when we were in Chicago together for ISTE. So
that's
if she can handle me in a human form twice, she can put up with a little bit of digital slack, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 I loved your episode from ISTE. That was awesome. You had a couple, actually.
Yeah, we did a couple of things there. It was a really good time. We had a good time out there. It's interesting. And on your show with Carol specifically, you talked about sort of this voice ed family and the way we're all connected and how personal that connection is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, of course, have been taking a lot of heckling from myself and from Leanne Hansen out in Australia. and you take it well, bless you. But we do get to know each other, and it's great when we get to be on each other's podcasts, and because we kind of know a little bit about each other, but then you get on the podcast and you kind of, you know, do that deeper dive and get to know each other a little better. And then on social media, we make fun of each other, no doubt about it, but it's a good time and it feels good.
Are you saying that I don't in fact have hashtag worthy hair? I'm just that's a joke. Are you saying you don't mean that? I'm a little offended.
I totally mean that because I think Leanne Hansen actually came up with the hashtag. but every picture you posted when Carol and Sarah Lalonde were visiting you, I mean, there was not a hair out of place. It was quite amazing.
I've got good hair. What can I say?
You do have good hair. And so, I mean, something that is that good needs to be recognized.
When I talk about Twitter now, I talk to teachers and everybody else, I regularly think about like, do I bring up hashtag Brad Schreffler's hair as an example of the power of Twitter or as an example of Twitter is a very weird and scary place, and maybe you shouldn't go there.
I don't think we mean it in a scary way. I think you know, we know that you could take it, and that that you know that we're having a little fun with you, and it's kind of nice on Twitter to have that familiarity, even though you and I have never met, Leanne and I have never met, I've never met Carol, I've never met Sarah, and yet we can have a little fun with each other, and just make, you know, it kind of makes your day when I see. When I see a stupid GIF or something from Leanne, or you respond to one of our hashtag Brad Schreffler's hair, and you know, it's just fun. It's just a lot of fun.
It is. It is. I enjoy it. Is that why you started podcasting? Is you needed something fun, or is it something more for you, or what is that?
Actually, I just wanted to see your hair, but I didn't realize that podcasting is only audio. So I guess I made a bit of a mistake. No, really. When Steven started Voice Ed back just over a year ago now, a year and a half or so, I was taking a course and I had heard through my instructor, because he knew Steven, about this, that this was happening. And Steven had me on a show called Voice Ed. I think it was Voice Ed Tech Slam, where I had to defend Pixton.com, which is an online comic creator, against Steven, who it was defending a Super 8 video, which is, you know, circa about 1960?
That is Steven's definition of modern technology, to be fair.
Yes. I mean, anyway, so that was the first time I ever appeared on Voice Ed. And I think it was probably like he started what in about February, and this might have been March or April. And he said to me at the time when we got off the air, you know, if you're thinking about podcasting, why don't you come on Voice Ed and do a podcast? And at the time I was right in the middle of a course, and then it became June and it's crazy. And so I kind of put it off. And then in the fall, he came after me again. And he said, come on, you know, you're on social media, you're doing all these things. How about a podcast? So I said, okay, just give me a little bit of time to figure out what my podcast is about. You know, I think there's lots of great shows out there that are like Seinfeld. They're a show about nothing, or they're a show about everything. But I tend to be a little more type A, and I needed kind of a format to get my head around the idea. So probably around Christmas, I got the idea of maybe doing like a mentorship kind of idea where you talk to teachers about the things they do and the things they want to know. And so when he had his year, anniversary show where he was broadcasting live, he had a bunch of podcasters on to help me kind of workshop the idea. And I believe you were on, and Shane and Rodenizer and Leanne and probably Noah. And, you know, y'all gave me all kinds of encouragement. And I thought, well, now I got to do it. So that next week, I recorded my first podcast, sent it to Steven, and I've been doing about one a week since then. So I think I'm in the 30s, somewhere in the 30s of episodes now.
Wow. That's a good little clip you got going on. I mean, this seems like an obvious, but you are enjoying it, I assume. You enjoy the podcasting life?
I do enjoy it. I enjoy talking to people, and it's always a bit nerve-wracking asking someone you don't know, because the folks you know, they're going to feel maybe a little bit of social pressure to come on the show, or they're interested in helping you out, and they're usually happy to help you out. But when you're approaching someone on Twitter who maybe you don't know or you've never met in real life, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. You're thinking, well, the worst they can do is say no, and I'll just ask somebody else. But I've been amazed that people are willing to come on the show, that are willing to share and to come on and talk to me, and you meet some really amazing people that way. I mean, I had Joy Kerr on this summer, who does a lot with Genius Hour, and I've got an episode coming up with Tara Martin shortly, like talking to Carol Salva, talking to yourself. I had Shane on this summer. You learn so much, and it's a lot of fun as well. Like, it seems weird to be sitting here looking at the computer chatting with someone, but it really is those conversations you would have with someone in the staff room about things. But it's not in the staff room. You have a little bit more time. You're at home. You're in a comfortable chair probably, and you can kind of get into some of those things that maybe the bell would interrupt at school.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good description. I think it is. And I think you also touch on, I mean, podcasters, in my experience, at least education podcasters, are super duper friendly. Like, I've never reached out to an education podcaster and they were just like, nah, we don't really want to help you with anything. Like, we don't want to talk to you. We don't want to do anything with you. It's always like, yeah, how can we help? What can we do? And it was even true at when I was out in Chicago at ISTE, and I would run into other podcasters and was like, hey, how's it going? Like, what can we do to help? What are you up to? When are you presenting? When can we be there? Like, you know, Dan Kranis was there and I showed up at his session, and, you know, we ran into, you know, Jeff Bradbury, and he's like, do you have batteries? I'm like, no, I wish I did. I'd give them to you. Like, I mean, it goes all over the place. It's just really cool they're just a fun group of people in general.
Yeah, and clearly they love to talk, right? So the other podcasters are great to have on the show because they like to talk. They want to share with you. They're dying to get on there with you.
We do a fair amount of talking. That is valid. Mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's true. So yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, I think we're coming up to it. It's time. It is the moment that everybody's been waiting for. This is it. Ramona, I'm going to get to the meat of our conversation, and I'm going to ask you my first question. And my first question for all my guests is always, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, now I remember that question. There's a lot of regional questions, I think, that pop up. And I think in the States, and you did a whole podcast on the guns in schools, which is terrifying. And we don't have that as much here in Canada as you do. But I can't imagine getting up in the morning and going to school and being worried about a situation like that. And yet we do a drill for that at school in case there's an intruder in the school. I mean, there's lots out there in the media and we want to be prepared. But I think for Americans, that's a bigger problem maybe than it is here. So I would say here, the biggest problem in education is how maybe political it is and how really well-meaning and well thought out programs and for example, right now, there was this summer, there was supposed to be a huge curriculum writing session for Indigenous education and reconciliation. And we had a new government that was elected in our province in May or June, and they canceled it. So here, you know, we are thinking we're making progress and going in a direction we want to go. And then the politicians get involved and the door is slammed. So I guess for me, the biggest issue for me in education is that although politicians seem to be well-meaning, sometimes their interference, and I don't want to say that they shouldn't be a part of it because we're funded publicly. So of course, parents and politicians need to have a say. But sometimes when they're interfering for votes, it's very frustrating. Right now we're dealing with, they've canceled the sex ed curriculum to change it. They're talking about banning cell phones in schools, canceling the Indigenous program. So a lot of huge changes all of a sudden that are going to have really profound impact on our students in the years to come. If that makes any sense at all, Brad.
Yeah, it does. I think sometimes in the U.S. it is not always easy to see that the politicians actually have best interests in mind at all. So I think the fact that you're able to say that you think they do in Canada, it could be worse. Let me put it that way. But what I will say is I think we deal with very much the same issue, and that political component is frustrating. And one of the ways I always look at it is the fact that I can't speak for Canada, but I know in the U.S., very, very few to almost none of our politicians were educators or have ever been educators or understand mm-hmm. anything about education other than that they went to school. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that gives you anywhere near the authority or the know-how to make appropriate decisions in most cases.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, Brad, because I've certainly heard lots of people say, you know, well, I went to school. I know what it's all about. Well, you know what? I've been to a hospital, but I'm not doing brain surgery tomorrow. You know, you don't want me operating on you. I don't know enough about that. I stay out of that. And yet people think because they went to school and then in the 70s or the 80s that school is still like that and that they know all about it. And it's really not the case. And it's certainly, you know, not the schools. The school that we're working in today is certainly not the school that most parents went to, or certainly not most politicians. Now, we are a little bit lucky in Canada. Our prime minister is a former teacher, but our federal government doesn't really have a whole lot of input into the school system. So currently our premier of Ontario, not a teacher, and certainly not really interested in what I think is best for kids.
So what do we do about it? And I know that's a heavy question, but what do we do about it? You know, if we have this system that sometimes feels like it's working against us, is there something we can do? What might that be? And if not, does that mean we're forever doomed?
It's such a balancing act, isn't it? You know, you're always a little bit afraid to talk too much about it because ultimately they're the guys who sign your checks. But at the same time, if you don't speak out against something that's wrong, then the wrongs will continue to happen and then nothing will change. You know, like, I think a good thing that's happening, especially lately in Ontario, is with social media, both educators and students are speaking out against some of these things. Last week there was a walkout that demanded that the sex ed curriculum does talk about consent, which is a big thing that they've pulled out of the sex ed curriculum in the last few weeks. And students, high school students, are walking out to protest the changes that the government has made, taking the sex ed curriculum back like 20 years. So I think that's positive, and that we support students who are sticking up for themselves and saying, you know what, we're not going to accept this change. You need to look at this a little bit further. So I think that that's a good thing that we do. I think that as podcasters, that's a good thing for us to do. And hopefully, you know, people will listen to people who are in teachers who are in the classroom and doing the job and think, you know what, that doesn't sound like the classroom I went to. I need to learn more about that before I'm making a decision and before I'm voting in the next election.
Okay. So that's something. And I agree. I think we need to be speaking up. We need to have our voices heard. And certainly podcast gives us the ability to do that. Absolutely. But I often feel like it's just not enough. It's mm-hmm. not that I don't feel like that's moving the needle where we need it to move. And maybe none of us can. Maybe we are in a situation where all we can hope to do is move the needle and a millimeter at a time. But I don't know. I always kind of always come back to this idea that we can't let a generation go. The problem with education is we can't let it go. You know, if government is interfering with business this heavily and we can have a whole different discussion about capitalist models, but if a government is interfering with business as bad and businesses start to collapse, then they correct ship hopefully and they adjust and make changes. But if we let schools start to collapse, we're talking about humongous problems for our children, and we can't allow that, right? And so I feel like it's, we're moving the needle a little bit in the right direction, and then I turn around and they've moved it a lot farther in the wrong direction in a different way because we were busy looking at a different needle.
It's interesting too, Brad, because I think you brought this up. Was it Roland Chidiak you were talking to about this? I think he was talking about funding, but you can't not let it happen. Like, we could not spend money in our class, but then those kids miss out. So we could allow the government to continue to make these changes that are hurting kids, but then those kids are the ones who pay for it down the line. Like, you're right. There's a whole generation of kids who then don't understand what consent means and don't understand, the issues of transgender students or students who identify themselves as LGBT. I don't know if I have the answers, Brad, but, I think we have to keep plugging away because, like you said, the kids need us to.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree. You know, tell me, I've heard, and this isn't my traditional soapbox, but I'm going to go with it. I've heard a lot this summer as I've listened to Voice Ed and I've heard a lot about there's something going on with the sex ed curriculum in Canada. And could you maybe just give me a little bit of information as someone who has no idea what's going on, what has happened and what is going to happen or what the situation is?
So I feel like maybe Stephen Hurley should be on with us here because he's really good on the dates and what's been going on. And you know, I'm following it and I'm trying to be a part of it, but you know, you're also working that day job. So when the new government came in, the previous government changed the sex ed curriculum in 2015, they changed it so that there was much more understanding about what consent means. And also, you know, and a recognition of what different families look like and recognition of students who identify with different sexual preferences, LGBT. And the new government came in and there was a lot of backlash when that first sex ed curriculum came out and there was parent consultation. But there, of course, were groups of maybe perhaps more conservative parents who were not happy with it because it does talk about, you know, non-traditional families and non-traditional sexual preferences. A lot of stuff in the media about that. And it seemed, you know, a couple years down the road to have died off, but then the election came up and it became an election issue. And so the new premier had promised that when he was elected, he would withdraw this curriculum. And he has withdrawn it and he has replaced it with the curriculum that this replaced, which was written in 1998. So you can imagine that it's a little bit outdated and doesn't talk about things that are current today and certainly doesn't give a lot of voice to the variety of students that we have in our classroom. That's maybe it in a nutshell.
Yeah, it is. And it becomes more complicated by the fact that you kind of have a few different distinct education systems in Canada. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, because you have the Catholic education systems and then the secular systems. But then within each of those, you have the French Catholic and the French secular, and then the English Catholic and English. Am I right about that?
You are. And then there's also private schools as well. So,
okay. So it becomes more complicated because each of those different combinations sort of handle the standards in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you'll have, especially with the private schools, you'll have private schools that are religion based. But even within the public schools, I mean, we've got students from all different backgrounds, all different religions, and some parents really object to talking about some of these things with students.
Hmm. So I imagine as a teacher, this has got to have been a stressful situation to deal with coming back to the school year. We're towards the beginning and coming back and kind of not knowing what you're teaching at a certain point.
Yeah, and not exactly sure what you're supposed to teach. And the school boards actually have come out against the decision of the Ontario government and instructed us to continue with the old curriculum. And then the ministry is telling us to start with the really old curriculum. And some parents want us to teach the 2015 version and some want us to teach the 1998 version. And it is very, very confusing about what it is we're supposed to teach. And then the government came out with a snitch line so that if any teacher teaches something from the 2015 curriculum instead of the old curriculum, you know, it's just becoming one of these crazy media things.
A snitch line.
That's
got to be hyperbole, right? Like that cannot actually be a thing where there's a phone number to call if your coworker is teaching the wrong material.
I think it's actually for parents to call and complain. And it's anonymous. So of course they can say pretty much whatever they want on the snitch line about the teacher and you would have no recourse because you've been called out on the snitch line. There's been a huge social media push, from various educators to report a teacher doing something good on the snitch line instead of snitching, which I think is a great idea and hopefully, you know, those who are investigating these claims on the snitch line are kept busy with other things. But it just seems, I don't know, like a...
That has got to be one of the worst things I have ever heard. That got heavy. That got heavy on me real quick. The idea that you would encourage... Not only accept, it's one thing to have communication and open concepts with and open connections and lines of communication with your stakeholders. It's another thing entirely to encourage parents to tattle on their teachers. That is, we already have enough of that going on without a dedicated phone number for it. That is a scary slope for people to take, position to take. That's got to worry you, no?
It does a little bit. You know, I hope that I've built relationships with my students and my parents and so that they would, you know, if they have concerns that they would voice them to me long before they had to call the snitch line. But it's certainly, you know, if I'm a new teacher, especially a physical education teacher in a high school that is actively teaching, like, I'm doing a 2-week sex ed curriculum a year with my kids and because of their level, I'm not getting into maybe the meatier stuff every year, but if that's my, you know, full-time job teaching that curriculum, you know, I'm going to be a little worried, especially if I'm a new teacher.
Hmm. Yeah, that's wow. That's interesting. Well, I don't really know what to say about that. You've left me speechless.
Yeah. It kind of flattened a lot of us here as well. Like, are you kidding me?
Hmm.
Apparently he was not kidding us.
Wow. I mean, that's gotta, I will say this. Let's maybe switch to the positive. I like the idea of using the snitch line to tell all of the great things going on. I think
exactly.
That is,
I thought that was,
that is
a wonderful
way to sort of passive aggressively give the finger that line deserves to be dialed with. I think that's a good idea, but yeah, wow. That is, I'm glad I asked about that. Cause I feel like that's something that needs to be, more spoken about, because that would worry me a lot if that were being done in my classroom, because I advocate regularly, not just with just sex ed, but with any content, I often advocate for, you know, controversial conversations and pushing the bounds and talking about what students want to talk about. And I can just imagine that if that line were readily available to call like my district leadership or state leadership about the Board of Education, I can only imagine I'd get a call or two about on that line at least. That would scare me.
Well, and it's anonymous. It's anonymous too. So you don't really have any recourse if someone does snitch on you, and it might not even be true. Do you know what I mean? So if you've sent little Johnny home and he's mad because you had him on detention because he didn't do his homework or for whatever reason, could become a whole different story, and you could be reported for something that you didn't even do. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no there's no way around it.
That is something. Wow. Well, man. But there are good things happening in Canada. I don't know where to go from there. Like, there are good things happening in Canada. Let's talk about
absolutely.
One of those. I'm going to switch it. I'm just going to move on.
Because there's so many great things going on. That's just, you know, I'm surprised we actually, you know, I go down a rabbit hole and sometimes you just can't get out of it. But, there's awesome things going on up here.
This is not normally one of my questions, but I'm going to throw it out there. What is something that makes you proud to teach in Canada?
Let me think for a minute. Proud to teach in Canada. That's a tough one. I know that a lot of the changes that we're doing with project-based learning, make me proud to teach because, you know, we talk a lot about voice and choice and we talk about seeing our kids in a new light. And with my students, you know, a lot of them prior to a lot of the technology and prior to a lot of the project-based learning, they didn't get to show what they could do. They were really, you know, traditional school really had them doing a lot of written language. And for students with special needs, sometimes written language is a really tough road to hoe. And so the changes that we've made, whether it's through technology or whether it's through having them investigate the things that they're interested in and wondering about, has let my kids really show where they shine. And I'm so proud of what they've been able to do. And, you know, you'll have people come and say, oh, I can't believe you did that with your students. Well, I didn't do it with my students. My students decided to do it. And I just opened the door and let them go.
Can you give me an example of something that you've done with technology in your classroom?
One of the things that it's really helped students with is students who don't have written language. So I have students who don't know their alphabet and they can't read the words, but they speak quite well. And so when you have the ability to make a video or to do a podcast and to show your learning that way, It's an opportunity for kids to really shine. And I had a student who did a genius project on the local hockey team. She's a big fan. And so she put together interviews with the players and was able to create a slideshow of all the players and put all their, with a little bit of help, put all their stats in, and she narrated it all. And she had this huge multimedia show that she put on for the class on, you know, the day we're presenting it. And I was never prouder. It was amazing. It was something that a lot of kids her age probably wouldn't have been able to put together and do. And yet here she is in a special education class doing it.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. I'm about that. Yeah, I think technology does a great job of eliminating some of those barriers, eliminating some of the inequities that already exist. You know, and you and Carol actually talked about that on your episode about how it helps with language learners as well. So mm-hmm. I think that's a really powerful use of the technology. And it is good to see that it's helping people who need it, you know, who need that support. So that's good. I like that. I feel better. We're going to move past the snitch line. We're going to focus on the positives. And I like that. Good stuff. Thank you very much for that. I'm gonna move to my next question. And my next question for all my guests is, what is something that you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
I think it's, you know, take some risks to try new things, even if they don't work out the first time through. Like, I do a lot of work with my kids on growth mindset, but I also model that. So, you know, sometimes you'll be on Twitter and you'll see someone's go, oh, they got a hashtag on, a hashtag on math and candy. So let's say it's hashtag candy math. And so, you know, I don't know if it'll work or not. Although if it says candy, it's probably going to work. Let's try it out. So, you know, jump in with the kids and see what happens. Go out there and try it. Or you hear about some field trip somewhere that no one's ever been before. Try it. Go out there. Do it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you know, the next field trip will come along and it will be better. So I see a lot of teachers who are afraid to take those risks, afraid to make those jumps. And I think that's what I really wish more educators would do. Try something new. Don't do the same thing over and over and over again, because you're just going to get the same results. Bored children.
Yeah, I like that. I like that not only that your immediate move from taking risks is directly into modeling that growth mindset, because I think so often we say, let's take risks. And we mean comfortable, safe risk. And we put in a ton of planning and preparation and then everything goes great. And we go, look at how brave we are. And I think it's great to talk about how when things go wrong, and honestly, in my opinion, they should go wrong.
And they do.
then you don't just give up and fall back to what you're comfortable with. You keep going. And I think that's a great, I'm glad that you go there. I'm glad that that's where you head.
Yeah, that's, I even though, you know, and I've talked about this before with other people too, maybe it's a little bit scary. Like podcasting was a little bit scary to start, you know, maybe what if nobody listens? What if nobody cares? What if nobody says they'll come on the show and I'm stuck there talking to myself? But if you don't try it, you're never going to know if you do it. And I shared that fear with my students. You know, some of you, I said, you know, some of you are afraid to go on a field trip, or some of you are afraid to be integrated in a math class. Well, look, here's something I was afraid of, and I went in and I did it and I loved it. Now, I wasn't perfect first time out. Doesn't matter. I'm still learning, and it's important for you to do that as well. And if we don't model it, then who's going to show them?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think it's good. Can you think of an example where you've just fallen flat on your face? I'm just this episode's going to be Ramona Maharg, all of the examples. Just, I'm just making you give me examples of everything today.
Let's see. Well, probably this week, you know, I have a new grade 9 student. Autism fairly struggles a fair bit with changes and transitions, and especially fire drills are not good. And I said to my staff, I said, okay, let's warn her. Let's give her some headway. You know, let's let her see that it's coming and be prepared for it. And so we told her 2 days ahead of time that this fire drill was coming. And then we had 2 days of her obsessing about when the fire drill was. And we got nothing done for 2 days because we mentioned the fire drill. And I said to the folks who work with me, I said, yeah, that was a fall on our face moment. We should have just let it happen naturally and see how she did. And so we had another fire drill this week and we didn't tell her about it and everything was just fine. So sometimes, you know, you think you're doing the best thing and it doesn't work out at all and you have to readjust and try again.
Okay, that's good. I like that. I like that you make that adjustment and you try it a different way the next time. You don't just do the same thing a second time. So that's good. I like that. Yeah, that's a great example. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
So yeah, I think that's good. I like that you're modeling that growth mindset for your students. I think that's excellent because I don't think nearly enough of us do that. And I think it'll be really easy, especially in a special ed classroom to not do that. I think it's easy to sort of stay with what's comfortable, in any classroom, but I imagine it would be easy there too, because you have that extra layer of complexity of students like that who will, you know, really be upset by change or something different or something not going well or themselves feeling like they're a failure or causing you to fail. So I imagine that would be even easier to allow as an excuse. And it doesn't feel like in any way you allow your population to be an excuse to not do something.
Oh. No, and that's always been really important to me that they push themselves. And to be honest, sometimes they really inspire me with their, like, there's always moments where they show me growth mindset without me asking for it, if that makes any sense. Like that some days I think for some of them, it's got to be difficult to just even get on that bus and come to school, right? Like, you know, if you consider, you know, a student who maybe is having trouble making friends because there's a lot of social difficulties or they have all kinds of anxiety. Like just like they're showing growth mindset, just showing up in my room some days. And so, you know, that inspires me as well to think, you know what, if they can do it, I can do it. And to say to the other kids, you know, look at, you can do this. There's no reason you can't try. If you don't try, you're always going to wonder what if, and we don't want to be what if people. We want to be, hey, remember that time? And you know, look, thank God we tried that, because if we hadn't tried it, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I like that. Don't be what if people. I like that. Don't be what if people. Excellent. Oh, Ramona, we're doing great. We're doing great. There was a little blip there where I felt really bad for Canada, but I think we're doing good.
Maybe not Canada in a whole. That was just Ontario. Those things are just happening in Ontario. If you talk to Shane, those things probably aren't happening out in Edmonton.
No, not in Edmonton. I don't know where any of those places are. So Ontario is Canada. Canada is Ontario. I don't really know. It's all north of me. So I got nothing.
Yes.
So is 90% of the U.S., to be fair. But still, it's all north of me. My ignorance sometimes shows when I deal with people from outside of the country. I only made like 17 Australia jokes in the episode with Leanne, so I think I'm doing pretty good.
She could take it.
Yeah, she can take it. And
she probably gave it right back.
I was going to say, she can dish it up just fine. So I think we're good. Yeah. Let's roll into my last question because we're doing great. And I want to roll into my last one and see where we're at. So my last question for all my guests is, who is the greatest teacher you have ever had?
Oh, that's the one I remembered when I said it. I know we always ask about your favorite teacher and the best teacher. And there's so many great teachers that I've had, and whether they're in education or not. But I think one that really sticks out for me is Mr. Mutzers, Peter Mutzers. And he's the first guy who made me think I was smart. And he was my teacher in grade 6 and 7. And I think before that, I was going to school. I was doing the thing and, you know, you had to get up, you went to school, you went home, blah, 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 blah. But I remember one day him asking a question and I answered it. And it was kind of an oddball question. He said, "How did you know that?" And I said, "I think I read it in a book somewhere." And he says, "My goodness, that was not in the text that we read. And you figured that out. You are one smart cookie." And I think from that day on, he had built that relationship with me, and he pushed me to work harder that way. And so I think he was probably one of the best teachers I ever had. Not because he was a great math teacher or because he was a great language teacher, and he was both, but because he really knew how to make you feel that you belonged and that you could do it. Like, I think he pushed me a little bit to take those risks. So maybe he's my first growth mindset example.
Okay, I like that. Tying it all back together. See, look at you. You're like a pro podcaster. You did that for me. I was going to go there, and you beat me to it, so...
Yes.
But I think you're right. I think there's tremendous power as an educator in making your students feel smart. It's so easy to think that someone has already done that. And so we need to, by the time they get to us in X grade, we need to push them and show them that they can be better and give them these high expectations. But it is also really important to make a student recognize that they are good.
Yeah, the mistakes they've made are just, you know, perhaps a step along the journey, that's not who you are, that you're always able to improve yourself, and that you do have the ability to do that. And I think that he was probably the person who most inspired me, other than my kindergarten teacher, just because I just, you know, when you're in kindergarten, your teacher is, I mean, if she could be superstar Barbie, really, or like astronauts, like in kindergarten, the teacher is a god. So it doesn't matter how good they are or not, I think you're going to love them because they're wonderful people. But I think that, you know, Mr. Mutzers for me was that guy who made me want to be a teacher.
Excellent. Well, Ramona, this has been just a really good conversation. I really do appreciate your time. I love your outlook. I love the way you talk about and respect and care for your students, which is obviously evident in how you talk about them and the things you're doing with them. I appreciate the 9 million examples you provided me, since that's all I seem to ask for today. I don't know. Maybe it's a byproduct of having been at a training all day where I felt like I needed more concrete examples. Now that's all I'm looking for in the world. But you know, I really do. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, especially, you know, with all the quips about your hair and the bad gifts and so on. But
hey, like you said, they make my day.
Yes.
So,
oh, and nothing makes my day like when you respond to one of them. So please continue to heckle back.
Oh, I will. I personally liked when I took a moment and made my hairstylist take a picture with me. I thought,
oh my God, that was so awesome.
Cause I like could not wait to go see her again to explain. I was like, I've got a story I've got to tell you. You wait till you do this. The funny part about that, by the way, and we'll end with this little anecdote. The funny part about that is I told her, hey, all I did when I texted her, I was like, hey, I need to come and get my hair cut, and I've got the funniest story ever for you. And so I knew I was going to have her take a picture with me, and she was so mad at me. She's like, Brad, I look awful. Like, you should have told me like what was going on. I was like, but I wanted to tell you the story. I couldn't ruin the surprise and ruin the story. She's like, you could have just told me, like, I'm coming in for getting a haircut. Make sure you dress nice. And I'm like, that is the creepiest. Like, that would have been the creepiest text a guy could ever send to a woman. I'm coming in for you to cut my hair. Dress nice. Like,
what? Dress nice. That would be your last appointment, Brad. That would, that, you would have been cut off.
She'd have been like, on second thought, I'm not available.
And then what would have happened to the hair? Like,
I'd have to find somebody else. It could have been disastrous. A struggle. It could have been. It could have ruined my entire brand identity, and I couldn't take that risk.
Absolutely, couldn't take that risk. No.
So,
and really, in any picture with you, like, are people? They're not looking at her, anyways. It was nice to see her and see the genius behind the hair. But really, I mean, it's the hair. The hair is the centerpiece of that photo.
That is apparently what it is. I don't know. I did not, was not aware until recently how powerful my hair was. But now I'm learning.
So. Yes. Bow to the hair.
This, I don't even know that I'll leave any of this in the podcast because it makes no sense without context.
Hey, you did introduce me as ridiculous. So I got to tell you, you throw ridiculous across the plate, I'm going to hit it out there.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, Ramona, thank you so much. Oh, before we go, how can people find you and connect with you? I should ask that.
Okay, well, if you're interested in knowing some of the things I do, I share a lot of it on my blog, which is called My Circus, My Monkeys. And there's a couple of blogs out there, so you have to put Maharg with it. So My Circus, My Monkeys on Blogspot, Ramona Maharg. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ramona Maharg. So that's a great place to find me. And if you want to chat with me, then I'm usually there.
Okay.
Probably posting a disgusting or silly gift.
That is probably true. Well, Ramona, thank you again so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad.
Have a great night.
You as well.
Ramona, thank you so much for being ridiculous and serious at the same time, like only you can. To connect with Ramona, you can find her on Twitter. She's at Ramona Maharg. Also, check out her podcast, I Wish I Knew EDU, on SoundCloud. And don't forget her blog, mycircusmymonkeysmo.blogspot.com. Links to all that stuff are in the show notes, so just click over and check those out. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler, and the same on Instagram as well. I love to hear from you guys over there. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. I am booking guests right now, so if you're hearing this, reach out to me. I'd love to talk to you for the show. Everyone has a unique perspective to offer, so please reach out and let me know you'd like to be on the show. You can also reach out to me on the feedback page on my website, which gives you options for feedback additionally, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, don't be a what-if person. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.